Hey guys, today on Sports Spectrum, Patrick Lencioni, New York Times best-selling author, keynote speaker. This is a big deal kind of guy, at least for me, talking to a man who's a keynote speaker all around the world, who's respected in the leadership space, very much in the same vein as a John Maxwell or a John Gordon. He's written a ton of books. I believe it's 13 books, sold over 8 million copies, translated into more than 30 languages. He hosts two podcasts. He's even worked with a number of coaches in the professional and college world, both in basketball and football, and he loves Jesus. And that's what was really cool to talk to Patrick about, is not only how does his faith kind of guide him in the way that he leads today, but who are some of the people in sports who are doing it the right way, who are great leaders? And he also has this framework for predicting the success of NFL teams based on analysis of their leadership, which I thought was fascinating. Now, we taped this a little while ago, so some of it may not have come to fruition, knowing that you're listening to this now, and those teams or players that he talked about maybe didn't live up to the hype. Of course, injuries and things happen. But just understand that the principles that Patrick Lencioni talks about here are gold. You want leadership gold? You want faith in front leadership gold? Get a pen, get a notebook, get something out, get your notes section on your phone, and start taking some notes here. It's leadership gold. You can press pause right now. Go get a pen, go get a piece of paper, go get a notebook, and take some notes here. Maybe you're listening on a jog or you're listening in the car right now. I get it. You can go back and listen a second time because there's such good stuff here. From Patrick Lencioni, New York Times best-selling author. It's coming up in just a second here on Sports Spectrum. First, I want to remind you before we get to our interview with Patrick about our Sports Spectrum magazine. You can save 15% off a one-year subscription right now if you go to sportsspectrum.com, click the subscribe button at the top, the magazine icon, and you can get a one-year subscription to the Sports Spectrum magazine. We already keep it affordable for 1 year. It's less than $5 an issue. But you can get 15% off a one-year subscription to the Sports Spectrum magazine right now by going to sportsspectrum.com. And when you go check out in the cart area on the website, use the code podcast15, podcast15, and subscribe to the Sports Spectrum magazine. The best thing that we do here at Sports Spectrum, I promise you, you will love it. It makes a great gift, especially this time of year. Perfect for the kids. Subscribe to the Sports Spectrum magazine today. Patrick Lencioni. Patrick, welcome to Sports Spectrum. It's wonderful to talk to you and have you on the show.
Thank you for having me, Jason. I can't wait. This is going to be a blast.
This is going to be awesome. New York Times best-selling author. And I told you before we started, I was way behind on this. Like, I had known about your work and I had read, you know, a lot of this stuff on the web, and I had heard you on podcasts, and I know our good friend John Gordon and you have done a lot of work together in similar spaces. But I had not read The Five Dysfunctions of a Team until just a few days ago. I'm reading through this and I'm like, oh, there's a reason why this was probably one of the books that were on the New York Times bestseller and has continued to encourage and inspire teams and in the leadership space for so many years. I look on the back and there's Eric Spoelstra giving an endorsement. I'm like, Patrick, I'm way behind the curve here. This book though is fantastic. So it's wonderful to have you on.
You were just a wee lad when that book came out, though.
Yeah, I was in my 20s, we'll just say. I'm no longer in my 20s as you and I speak. But this book, what is it about a book like this that you could have written? I think you wrote it in 2001, is that right? 2002?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, 2000.
So for that book in 2000, 2001 to be written, and 20 years later to still be somebody like me reading it and say, yep, this relates. Yep, this relates. I mean, this doesn't have all the cell phone stuff in there and the iPhones and the FaceTimes and the social media, but everything in here is still 100% relatable to where we are today in the world of leadership.
Yeah, because teamwork and leadership are human endeavors. Yeah. And it's why we still learn the most. I mean, it's like Jesus didn't have any cell phones or flip charts or anything like that, but the truth is the truth.
Yes.
How we exercise that might change, but not what it is. And teamwork This is a book I wrote for about this woman who takes over a startup company in the Silicon Valley. It's a fiction story because I write all fiction. Yeah. I had no idea that soldiers in Afghanistan would be reading it in their barracks, that Eric Spoelstra and all these football and other coaches would be using it, that churches would be using it. I wrote it for companies and had no idea what was going to happen. So I think it just speaks to the fact that universal principles, and I tried to write it in very realistic language and settings that people could relate to.
So why fiction? Why was that the direction? I know John, and I've read a lot of his books. John Gordon has a similar, at least the early books were very much fables. Why is fiction in the world of fable something that you felt called to?
Well, there's a few reasons. Well, first of all, I took a screenwriting class in college and I love writing. I've always loved being fiction writing. And so I didn't go into that as a profession, but I went into leadership and doing this stuff. And then I came up with a theory and somebody said, you should write a book about that. And I wasn't going to. And they said, well, somebody else is going to write that book. And I said, okay, I'll write a book. And then I thought about all the business books I've read that I read the first two or three chapters and I put it on my shelf. And I thought, I don't want to write a book that people aren't going to read. So I said, what about making it so easy to read, so compelling that they'll get through it and they'll say, I learned it. Now I'll summarize what they've just learned. And I just a guy in the last few weeks came up to me and said, Pat, I have not read a book since college and I read your books. Wow. And so I thought, if a person can't do it in a short, in one sitting, and if it can't keep them engaged, then maybe I don't deserve to have them finish it. And so I just did that. I didn't know if it would work well. It did. I've written one nonfiction book, which was a lot of work. But since then, people said, we love the fiction books. So keep doing it.
I do too. I can't tell you how much I've been enjoying reading The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. You mentioned Eric Spoelstra. That must be one of those moments when you find out like an NBA champion head coach wants to use your book as he's building his culture. There must be something real special when you hear that.
Well, yeah, and I didn't even know it until later.
Oh, wow.
You know, he told me he first got it when they acquired LeBron James. He goes, okay, hey, this teamwork stuff, you know, because, and so he used it for that. I didn't meet him till later. And he was like, he said, oh yeah, I use this all the time. Now we've worked with him. He even told us a story. I heard that last year he was in front of a bunch of people in their organization. He's, you guys, I don't know what offense we're going to run. I haven't decided that yet, but I know we're going to be doing this, the five dysfunctions of team. So one of those things that's universal, regardless of what offense you run or what approach you have on the field or on the court. You know, the other story that's interesting is Aaron Rodgers. Years ago, somebody called me and said, hey, did you see that Aaron Rodgers tweeted about you? And I said, no, what are you talking about? Well, the year that the Packers almost were eliminated halfway through the season, they lost like six games. They end up winning every game the rest of the year, and they went on and barely lost to the Falcons.
Yes.
In the NFC Championship game. And they asked him after the season, what did you do? How did you get that back together? And he goes, well, I read this book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, and I started dealing with my linemen differently. And we didn't know that he used our stuff. We had no idea. We did tweet with him, and he tweeted back to us. But so people in the world of sports have seen a lot of application for this. And again, it's just a pleasant surprise.
But when you wrote this, there was no inkling in your mind that an Eric Spoelstra-like character, Aaron Rodgers, MVPs in the NFL, would be incorporating this. Or was there? Was that in the back of your mind? Not at all?
No. I will tell you, I mean, to my surprise or to my discredit, I just thought I was writing it. Now, I played sports. I like sports. I coach my kids in sports. But I really didn't see it being that easily transferable. And I suppose we just were hoping that clients would get it and call us and have us do work with them. Yeah. And so I'm not surprised that the principles apply. I really didn't think people from outside the business world would be finding it.
Interesting. Now, I know your faith is important to you. Let's talk about that, how it's evolved, especially recently, as I've listened to you on a few other shows, and I'm hearing how God has really taken shape in your life in a more personal way, I'll say, in a relationship with him recently. So talk about your faith and share with us like the Lord and the importance of God and Jesus in your life.
Well, you know, it's so funny because as you pursue your faith, and that's the key, we have to pursue it. You know, if we just sit still in it and don't pursue it, we don't learn.
Yeah.
But at some point you get to that realization that, oh, it's either everything or nothing.
Right.
It's not just a side thing. And, you know, the whole idea of the lukewarm is really interesting. And so I've been a faithful Christian Catholic my whole life, and I still am. But just to realize that every single part of my life, it is him. You can say that, but then when you just realize that's the only place to find peace, it changes everything. And so to me, it's not a mantra. It's more like a way of living. It's just like, keep going to him. I think of that the place when Mary and Joseph lost him, and they went and they found him finally after 3 days. And they said, what are you doing to us? He goes, didn't you know I'd be in my father's house?
Yep.
And I think I went to church yesterday. It was a holiday. And I just went and sat in church for an hour. I laid down on the pew and took a nap. Nobody else was there. And I thought, I just want to be in his house. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just learning in a very simple, childlike way that that's where I'm meant to be. And that's all there is.
Why is Jesus the model of leadership? I think he's the model of leadership. Why, when you think about Christ and him coming to this earth, the example that he has set, why is he the model of leadership?
You know, because, and it's interesting because it's hard to answer that because he's the model, he's God made man. But then if you break it down, and I don't like to do it and be trite because he is God, right. But at the heart of leadership is humility and self-sacrifice. And the modern world has forgotten that. I mean, we look at these guys in the Silicon Valley and these famous CEOs and we think, oh, they're great leaders. It's like, no. They're good at getting what they want and controlling things. But true leadership is humility and self-sacrifice. And that's why people feel like they're rediscovering servant leadership. And I don't even like that term because it's the only kind.
Yeah.
And so he modeled humility and let things happen to him for the good of others and in a way that nobody else could have. And it really is the essence of what it means to be a leader. At the end of the day, it's not about us. It's about what others can do to benefit. And he died for us, the greatest act of leadership ever.
Yeah.
So it's even hard for me to put words around it, but I think it's those two things that the world today doesn't really quite get: humility and self-sacrifice.
Talking to Patrick Lencioni here on Sports Spectrum, New York Times bestselling author, of course, keynote speaker. I love talking to coaches on this platform. I think they have such a great platform to put that leadership, as you say, on display. You mentioned Eric Spoelstra, but who are some of the other coaches that you've seen and worked with or maybe just watched and said, that's it, they're doing it right?
Well, Tony Dungy. I did meet him once, but just looking at him and seeing him in a different settings and seeing how consistent he is, what an amazing person he is. Hmm. And to think that he coached football at the highest level and did so in a very gentle way. Now, that doesn't mean everybody has to do it exactly the same way, but to think that he actually did that so well, that has to be real. You know who's an interesting cat, and I know him, is Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Now, Jim Harbaugh is a man of faith,
yes.
But he's the kind of guy that if you were against him in a game, you'd hate the guy, you know, because he's so like competitive and great, but he is such a dear human being.
Yes.
So his persona on the field and on camera can be kind of in your face, but I know the things he does and what he believes off the field and how he treats people. And I think he's I like Tony Dungy and him are very different on face value, but they're both people motivated by those two things. So I think that's kind of an interesting parallel.
Yeah, those are two very good names. We had Coach John Harbaugh on this show a couple months back, Jim's brother from the Ravens, and he's different than Jim. Similar traits, a little eccentric, a little quirky, but his faith is very strong. That's obviously why we had him on this show, because there's the intersection of sports and faith. But what a leader in this idea of building culture. As you've talked to coaches, what does that mean? Like, could you even describe when you're trying to build a good culture? I feel like if a team's winning, they have a great culture. If they're losing, the culture is not great. But I don't think that's always the case. How would you describe that?
Well, culture, at the heart of culture is this concept called core values. But and it's really important to understand it's when you have two or three principles that you are not going to tolerate diversity around. And I like to use that word because people say, but diversity and tolerance is really good. It's like, well, not around the two or three principles that make your organization what it is. And those principles aren't necessarily good or bad. They're just true. So the Patriots had an amazing culture.
Right.
Okay. But that's not a good fit for everyone. Right. And so it was who Bill Belichick is and Kraft and all those people. Some people are going to fit that culture. Others aren't. Was it successful? It was wildly successful. But it doesn't mean you could take a player from a Tony Dungy team and put him on that team and they'd get the same thing, which is why you saw so many players leave the Patriots, who everybody thought were so talented, the players, and they'd go someplace else and they wouldn't do that well because they needed to fit the culture. Mm. So I like to say a culture isn't about good or bad. It's about being true to what you say you are, collecting people who fit that culture, operating in a way that's consistent with that. And if you're consistent over time, usually really good things happen.
Who's the, is that the best example from sports that you can think of that has had the best, it still has a great culture, even though Tom Brady's not there anymore with the Patriots, but are there a couple teams that you look at? I mean, the Heat stand out with your guy, Eric Spoelstra. What they just did this past year is just incredible. Are those the guys that come to mind when you think about culture?
Yeah, because if you think about it, they ride the ups and downs and they don't go terribly far down. They maintain something. You know, think about Eric Spoelstra. I remember when he first came on the scene. Well, he had been there as a film guy who breaking film down. But so they won their first championship with LeBron and Bosch and Dwayne Wade and all this. And I thought, well, all that guy's doing is babysitting. Right. I remember thinking that, like, anybody could do that. Of course, I didn't know what that entailed. And I've learned since then. But then they did well with completely other players. Mm-hmm. And he said, this year they had all these guys that weren't even drafted.
Yeah.
And they had to play their way into the playoffs and almost won the whole thing. So a coach creates a culture and it raises people up beyond what the parts are. And so I think he is a great example. Now, I will tell you this. I admire Bill Belichick. I kind of root for the Patriots because to think that a culture can overcome even talent deficiencies, I don't think I'd want to play for the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because his culture is kind of like, just do your job. Don't expect a lot of pats on the back. And I'm kind of a guy that likes that. I would probably rather play for Andy Reid.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
You know, but that doesn't mean it's good or bad. It's just different. And we have to find those places where we that fit. And that's why I'm so fascinated with the NFL draft, because I talk to these coaches like, find the kids who are going to work in your system. And you know what I love to say? This is a controversial statement. If Tom Brady had been drafted by the Raiders, we may not know who he is today.
100% right. I agree 100% with that. Yeah.
Right.
He fell into the lap of the right culture and the right team at the right time. If he's on another
team,
he
had the right temperament to deal with it.
Well, and what's interesting is when he got to Tampa, I mean, he's 42 or whatever he was, much different. But Tampa built their team in a very similar vein for those 3 years. The way that the culture was set in New England, and they said, Tom, help us versus us building it around, and telling you what you need to do. Different scenario, obviously, but different time.
Culture matters. And too often, and in the media, as you know, this people get so caught up in like they go to the combine and the measurements and, oh, he can jump a little higher and his hand size is a little greater. And we don't take character and cultural fit into account, which is why we get a Johnny Manziel. God bless him. I hope he does well. And we draft these guys and we're like, what happened? And it's like, no. You got to look beyond the numbers, beyond the size and the measurements.
Yeah. So much of that has to do with right fit, right place, right system. I've talked to a lot of quarterbacks who tell me, and former quarterbacks who are like, this guy can throw the ball. He's just in the wrong system. And you know pretty quickly, especially you're fascinated with the draft, these quarterbacks that are drafted, you'll know within 2 to 3 years, that's why they move on so fast, are they a fit in the culture? It's not about talent or whatever. It's just, are they a fit into what their system is built around? All right, so I got to ask you this, because I'm fascinated with this part of the NFL. I was told you have created a framework for predicting, this may even entail what we just talked about, but predicting the success of NFL teams based on analysis of their leadership. Please share.
Yes,
please share.
So when I can't sleep at night, I like to come up with new ideas. And I was sitting there and I decided, okay, I'm going to evaluate every NFL team based on leadership. And so what I did is I decided I would break it down. I'd do it on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being the best, 1 the worst. And I would do the coach, the head coach, the quarterback, and then the random assembly of other leaders on the field. Okay, let's take I'll do the San Francisco 49ers because I'm out here in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
So like this year, I said, okay, I think Shanahan's a good coach. I don't think he's one of the top leaders. I think he's more of a technician. He doesn't really talk to his players on the sideline. I don't think he's really a motivator. He's not Mike Tomlin or John Harbaugh or Andy Reid. I think he really is an offensive genius, they say, but he doesn't seem like a leader. So I gave him a middling rating, like a little bit higher than that. I think he's a good coach. And then they have Brock Purdy, who's in his second year, who's, I think, going to be a really good leader. And he already demonstrated that, but he's young. And so the team isn't necessarily like this guy. He's certainly not Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes. But then I looked at the rest of their team, and they've got all these players, Bosa and Trent Williams and Christian McCaffrey now, and Fred Warner, who might be the best of them. They've got all kinds of leaders all over the field. They got the highest rating. And so I'd add those up. And my son, Casey, who's my third son, he's a college student. He looked at the ratings of all the teams. And he goes, Dad, these almost match exactly what Las Vegas is saying their wins are going to be this year. Hmm. Within like a game. Half a game here or half a game there. And so we looked at it and I evaluated all the teams based on leadership, not talent, leadership. And the highest rated team in the league for leadership is the Eagles.
Yep.
Because Jalen Hurts is now solidly there. He's a son of a coach. Sirianni has proved he's a really good coach, so much that all of his assistants are getting jobs. And then they have leaders all over the field. All over the field. The offensive line alone is like that. Yes. So Las Vegas, and this is one of the cases where Las Vegas says they're going to win 10 and a half games this year. Hmm. Well, if they don't win 13, I'll be shocked. I got a 13 on them. Similarly, we go down to the Raiders. Okay. Las Vegas says they're going to win 7.5 games. Well, and you know, we can see how they're doing right now. It'll play out over the rest of the season, but I don't think they'll win 6. Because I think their coaches is always on the hot seat and has never really done well that. And so I don't think people are following him. They traded for Jimmy Garoppolo, who, if he was anything, it wasn't really a leader. He was a puzzle piece. Mm. And then they really are struggling with other positions there's not a lot of leadership outside of Max Crosby. And so when I added up my ratings, I got to 5.5. And I said, I think that's a lot more predictable. And so those are two that were a little bit off, but then you go right down the middle and they're almost all right on the prediction. So I think leadership is a really good way to look at whether a team's going to do well, because even if they get an injury, leadership is going to make them that much better.
Wow. Fascinating. That's fascinating. I'll have to come back. First of all, I have to get the list that you have, and then we'll come back when the season's fully over and compare it. I bet you it'll be pretty close. That would be my guess.
And I'll celebrate wherever I was wrong. And you know, I'm not perfect on these things. Maybe I don't know the nuances of some of these guys.
Of course.
Like watching Hard Knocks mm-hmm. in the preseason,
the Jets.
I got to see some of these other guys on the Jets that I hadn't. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it's fascinating. That's why I love sports in general, not even just football, but sports in general. When you're putting together a collection of people from all different walks, all different talents. There's a reason the Lakers in 2000, and I think it was 2012 maybe, when they got Steve Nash and Dwight Howard and they had Kobe there. And you're like, oh, this is going to be, they were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And it didn't work. And very quickly, and that was with Phil Jackson, by the way, one of the greatest coaches
right.
ever. And very quickly they pivoted and said, no, I think this is, we're just going to move on from this. It's very hard to predict success just based on talent.
Oh, it's so true. And my favorite example of this is when the U.S. lost to Argentina in the Olympics in basketball.
Yeah, I think that was 2000, right? 2000, yeah.
Manu Ginobili and four other Argentinian guys beat the best basketball players in the planet. Mm-hmm. And so you go, okay, talent can't be everything. And every year, the Patriots, they go, well, they have the most talented team. And it's like, nope, they really didn't. Because those players would go someplace else and they wouldn't do that well. They had the best team and the clearest culture. And it is, even in the NFL and the NBA and in Major League Baseball, it still beats talent. By the way, did you know that the team that had the most wins in the history of Major League Baseball, and I don't know if this is true, but it was 8 years ago, was the Seattle Mariners. And
yes,
they did that the year after they traded away or let go Ken Griffey Jr., Randy Johnson, and
Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah. They got rid of those three guys, and then the next year. So how could talent possibly be the best thing?
Yeah, It's fascinating to me because, like, even the New York Mets this past year in baseball, I'm a Mets fan, sadly, and they got all the talent, spent all the money, and by July, they had traded all of those veterans away, and they punted really quickly. Now, you can argue that's a good move, too, because they recognized quickly they had made a mistake. But you're thinking coming in, the Mets were locked for 95 wins in a playoff run because they got Verlander and Scherzer and all of these veteran guys, and they realized quickly it's just – not that they're not talented and they're go to other teams and continue to help those teams. It's that when they're in this culture and this mix with this group, it just didn't fit. And some things just don't fit. They just don't.
I think that what happened with Sean Payton this year, and like him or not, he's a very effective coach. Sure. Again, I might not like playing for him as well, but what he's going to do with the Broncos this year is people need to start trading for coaches. And they kind of did that this year. Remember, they had to give up assets to get him freed up from his contract. Because if you can get a good coach, it's worth 10 great players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yet we love to watch the draft, and it's so much fun. But we see year after year, the worst teams draft the best players, and it doesn't necessarily turn them around. It's because coaching and culture makes such a big difference.
Yeah, that's so good. We're talking to Patrick Lencioni here on Sports Spectrum. I want to talk about your faith again, go back to that. Tell me about the importance of that faith in your everyday life as far as what is discipleship and prayer. I mean, you mentioned you went to church and just got and sat with the Lord. That's awesome to think about. How has that evolved for you over the years? Like, if I'm talking to this guy who wrote The Five Dysfunctions of a Team in 2000, 2001, and I'm talking to that guy compared to the guy I'm talking to now, what's been the biggest difference for you?
You know, it's so funny. I think we have to become, I love where Jesus says, you know, let the children come to me for the kingdom of heaven belongs to one such as this. Because this whole idea of childish versus childlike, I think the older I get, and the more deep in my faith I get, I realize how simple it's meant to be. And it's not about, it's great to study and it's great to learn and to do all that stuff. But I was at Mass this past weekend and the priest gave a wonderful homily. Mm. And he just said, remember, you have to pray. Whatever, all these things I'm telling you, if you're not talking to Jesus every day. And I thought, well, I can be so learned and so sophisticated in my faith, but like an hour ago, I was just walking around my office here and I was like feeling kind of worried about some things. I just said, Jesus, what am I worrying about? You don't want me to worry about this, do you? Hmm. And I had to go to him.
Yes.
And I can do all the mindfulness exercises and all these other things, but it's like bringing it to him and laying it at the foot of the cross and saying, okay, Jesus, I'm yours. It's not about sophistication. It's about the simplicity of going back to him. And the more I learn, the better, the more childlike I get in bringing it to Jesus. So it's an interesting thing. We get older and we learn more and we go to Bible study. And what that does is it tends to strip it away even more and realize it's just him.
Well, it's funny. I'm wearing a wristband. It just says lock eyes with Jesus. Another pastor gave this to me and I'm like, that's really what it is. It's simple. It's difficult. I don't know why for so many of us, because we're distracted, I think, by the world, but it's really a simple concept here.
You know, C.S. Lewis wrote the Screwtape Letters. And I, by the way, I just read the most amazing thing about courage in C.S. Lewis today that blew my mind. Hmm. But in the Screwtape Letters, you know, it's the story of the devil and he has an apprentice and he's trying to teach the apprentice how to be a good demon. And the guy's like, should I do this? Should I do this? Should I get him involved in this? And what does he say? No, 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 no. Just keep them busy.
Yeah.
Just keep them busy. And television and our cell phones and social media, that's all he needs, because the more we spend in those things, the further we get away from Jesus. And so we just got to go sit in silence, lock eyes with Jesus. I love that.
Yeah.
And just be there with him.
Yeah. It's such a simple concept and such a difficult thing, especially in this day and age and where we are in life. Your company, by the way, it's called The Table Group, but I read that you refounded the company. I don't know if that has to do exactly with what we've just been talking about. I think it might, but explain what you mean by refounding the company.
So when we were 24 years old, and this happened right before that, we're a 27-year-old company now, but we're like a startup again. It's beautiful. Hmm. I was just watching, seeing what was going on in the world. The world is very different than it was 27 years ago.
Absolutely.
And it rapidly deteriorated in these past 5 years for a whole bunch of reasons.
Sure.
And things that we would have never imagined are now happening around us. And it's causing it's really disconcerting. And I remember thinking, gee, am I just going to spend the rest of my life helping companies eke out a little bit more money or become a little bit better? And there's certainly goodness in doing some of that. But I thought, you know, we need to go beyond that. So refounding the company means we changed our core values and our core purpose. And our core purpose is now, it's not to make organizations healthier. It's actually to work for truth and dignity, human dignity and truth, which is part of that is helping companies become more effective in teams and leadership and all that. But it's also to go and help organizations that are changing the culture. So we're doing more of that. And then the value we added, it was humble, hungry, and smart, but we added peaceful courage. Because in the world today, it takes more courage than it did 10 years ago. Because just proclaiming simple, loving truth is going to get you some difficult challenges from society that says that you're no longer acceptable if you believe in certain basic truths from Jesus.
Yeah.
And so we did that. We refounded the company. It's like a whole new world for us. We're 3 years into it, and it feels like we're at a startup again.
It's interesting that you say 3 years into it, because what was 3 years ago? It was COVID. It was the world shutting down, and that probably had a lot to do with your reset as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of things happened during that time. You know, I was thinking before about the simplicity of our faith, but going to church really is important. To like at the very least once a week, I have to sit there and be at Mass and be with Jesus, and I receive Him. And now I have to pray all the time, but I think it's really important. And one of the hardest things about COVID was when they shut down the churches.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of people never went back.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's not to say that just going to church makes us close to God, but certainly it's part of the thing. And so I think a lot of people drifted away from their faith during that time. And now it's up to us as their brothers and sisters in Christ to love them back.
Completely. It's community. We missed community because we were isolated. And where better than, I know at my church here, Hillside Community Church in Bristol, that's where I find community. And so to be told I can't go and be with my brothers and sisters and find my community, that was really hard. And you can watch as many Zoom messages as you want, but by May, I think it was March when it shut down, by May, we were all zoomed out from watching church on TV or anything else. We wanted to be together, and we couldn't be. It was hard.
Absolutely. And it was weird because during that time, there were certain things that you could get together for, but not church.
That's a whole other conversation, right? I know.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we never have to go through that again, I'll just say. But I love where your mindset is with your company. You're also hosting two podcasts. So Patrick, I mean, how are you doing all this? You're still writing books, you're speaking, sharing your story. What's going on here? Because I love the two podcasts as well that you host. And I'm thinking, how's this guy have any time to fit anything into your schedule?
You know, so one of the things that happened right after COVID is by the grace of God, truly, I came up with this new thing called the working genius, the six types of working genius, which is a 10-minute assessment people take, and it tells them what their God-given talents are and what the ones He didn't give you. So you don't try to lean into the things He didn't give you or make yourself feel bad, but you really pursue using the talents you have. And a podcast to me is a party.
Yeah.
Like, give me just a little bit of idea what you want to talk about. And I love exploring it. It's my genius. Like, it's the thing that gives me energy and joy.
Yes.
Now, there's other things that if you made me do even a little bit of it, it would crush me. So when you say, how do I do this? The real question is, how would I survive if I didn't get to do it?
Yeah.
Because it's what I love.
Yes.
But there's plenty of things I don't love that are really hard. I still have to do some of them, but it's good to do the things you're meant to do.
I feel that, like, you know, you feel like, what is your purpose? What is God's purpose for your life? I feel like that's how I'm living my life right now. Like, I am in His will and His purpose because I love what I get to do. I feel like it honors God, and we get to have great conversations, like a party, like you said, Patrick, me and you, just talking here, just hanging out.
And you know what's funny? One man's trash or a woman's is another man's treasure, because there's things that I love to do and people go, oh, that would kill me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you're kidding. And I look at their working genius. It's like, oh, yeah, you like doing the things that I don't like. We need each other.
Yes.
None of us is an island. And that's a beautiful thing. So I have that podcast. It's called At the Table, which is kind of a liberal arts podcast about the workplace.
Yes.
And then I have another one called The Working Genius Podcast, where we really dissect this new tool, which is growing like crazy.
Yeah. Well, you just described me and my wife when you're talking about us kind of meshing together. I love sharing. I don't mind being, you know, up at the church, either sharing a message from the church or speaking at conferences, not at the level you have, but I've gotten to speak at a lot of neat places. I love that. I love talking. I love speaking. I love asking questions. I'm a curious person. My wife, no, she's in the back of the room. She loves going to church with me, but she's not going to the pulpit. I couldn't pay her $1 million, Patrick, to go up and share a message. She's just wired differently, but her working genius, like you say, is different than mine.
Totally. And when you discover that, some people have spent their whole life feeling guilty about, like, why am I not good at that? It's like, because God didn't wire you to be good at that.
That's right.
That's okay. So when people see this, we've had so many pastors take this and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm a pastor, but I'm not good at writing a sermon. And I'm like, do you like counseling? That, yeah, I'd much rather be one-on-one with people. Yeah, that's a different kind. And it's okay. Let somebody who loves to come up with a sermon help you write it.
Right.
And they're like, but I think that makes me a bad pastor. And it's like, no, how about that guy over there that can give a sermon in a heartbeat's notice and write him in, you go for a walk in the woods and come up with a 12-part series, but he's not good one-on-one.
Right.
You know?
Everybody's
and so different. We're all different. Yeah. And that's awesome.
Well, The 6 Types of Working Genius is your latest book. I have that as well. That is next on the list once I finish The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. So it'll be interesting to kind of read something you wrote 20 years ago and then read something you wrote a year ago and kind of compare and contrast. But I'm really excited to dive into The 6 Types of Working Genius, a better way to understand your gifts, your frustrations, and your team, from Patrick Lencioni. All right, my last question, my friend, to you. We ask this a lot to our guests. I'm curious where your answer might be. When you think about the season of life you're in, we've talked a lot about kind of the younger Patrick Lencioni 20 years ago to where you are now. What do you think you're most thankful for? Gratitude is such a beautiful thing if we can all grasp it, I think, and just understanding that every day we can wake up and find something to be grateful for. What are you most grateful for to the Lord right now in the life that you're living?
Oh, so many things. But I will say that as my fourth son gets ready to move out, because he's going to go to college next year and we're going to be empty nesters, it's for my wife. Mm. And you know, even though we know this, as our kids are young, so much of our time is spent on our kids. And it's easy to kind of forget about the friendship you have with your wife. And that's a gift. And so I'm really thankful that I get to live with her and be with her and go through challenges and joys and all those other things. So I think I'm rediscovering the gratitude for her. Yeah. Laura is her name. She's wonderful.
That's really good to say, because we have one child, my wife and I. And so last year we sent her off to college. She's at a small Christian college in Indiana, Indiana Wesleyan. And so now we're in the empty nest stage, year two. She's a sophomore right now in college. And this has been a discovery process for us too. We've been married 24 years this year, and just remembering this beautiful friendship that we have, as opposed to just being mom and dad, or, you know, Dawn and Jason taking care of Sarah. Now Dawn and Jason are empty nesters, and it's been fun to kind of rediscover that. It's been a neat thing.
You know what I find is that all the changes we go through in life, we often lament the ending of something, but you need an ending. You know, there's no Easter without Good Friday. And you know, Sarah's doing great at college, and you have a new relationship with her. And now with social media and everything else, you get to talk to her and be part of her life. But God had something better for you. And I know this is going on with me too right now. It's like, oh man, what am I doing now with my company? Well, he had something even better for us going forward. And so one thing ends, endings are necessary, and he takes care of us through those. So
I realized I said that was I said I had the last question, but I actually have one more. I'm looking at my list and I'm like, how did I not ask this to you? So I'm going to ask it, Patrick, and this will be the last one. Who is the best leader in sports right now that you see? Who's the best leader?
Oh, gosh, I want to have a good answer. I'm focused on the NFL right now because it's in the middle of the NFL season.
It's all right.
The best leader in sports. Man, you know, I don't know him. I will say this, and this is hard for me to say because I'm not a USC fan, and so Pete Carroll always got on my nerves as a USC coach. But what he did last year with that team, and his oldest, you know, he's an older coach. I'm not sure that he didn't do one of the best coaching jobs last year ever.
Yeah.
So I like him. I love John Harbaugh. I don't know how every year, and I like Mike Tomlin. I love that guy. The best leader in sports.
Is there an athlete like that comes to mind? Because a lot of these guys are coaches, and you know, rightfully so, they should be coaches. Is there an athlete that stands out? Like, I feel like LeBron is a default answer, because he's
I don't think think he's the guy.
You don't think he's the guy? Okay.
No. I mean, I think he's powerful and influential, but I don't know that he's I don't know that the humility is there. Now, I can't say for sure.
Sure.
But there's things about that I think that it's almost hard to be that powerful. I mean, because part of being a good leader is knowing that you have a coach. And I think everybody knows LeBron's coaching the team. If he wants to do something, I don't know that he's easily coachable. So if I had to think of a player, I will tell you that, and he's an interesting cat too. Aaron Rodgers, when I saw, if he was being genuine on Hard Knocks,
yeah,
I was shocked at how wise and humble he was with the people around him. And I was, because he's doing all this kind of weird stuff around hallucinogenics, sure, and all that. And he's an interesting cat, but I was actually pretty impressed by how he managed and dealt with younger people. And I also heard that, like, when he goes to a golf tournament, if there's somebody with Down syndrome, he makes a beeline for them spends time with them and signs autographs. So I love that kind of stuff. Kirk Cousins, I loved what I saw of him in the quarterback series. And Patrick Mahomes, he does a great job too. Gosh, but I'm going to get off this call and I'm going to think about the person I should have said.
Yeah.
I just know it. I know it.
I feel like
I can't right now. Fred Warner. Fred Warner. I'll say Fred Warner.
Fred Warner. Interesting. San Francisco 49ers. I like it. Well, Patrick, this has been wonderful to talk to you. I'm so glad we were able to connect and have this conversation. I hope it's not our last. And certainly appreciate you writing all the books that you've written and encouraging all of us who've partaken in the content that you've created. Keep doing what you're doing, my friend. And I really appreciate you coming on Sports Spectrum.
All righty. God bless you, Jason.
And many thanks to Patrick Lencioni for joining us here today on Sports Spectrum. He was great. New York Times bestselling author. We actually talked for another 15 minutes after we finished our recording because, A, he was curious about some of the stuff that I've experienced. I was curious about some of the stuff that he's experienced. And we talked some more leadership. We talked about a little more in depth about guys like Tony Dungy, guys like Nick Saban that wasn't necessarily brought up in the podcast. It was a really awesome opportunity for me to get to know Patrick Lencioni, but for you to get to hear some leadership gold, some nuggets there that were just awesome. Pick up his books. There's 13 of them out. The latest, The Six Types of Working Genius. The most popular, probably The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. Highly recommend that book for your team as a coach, or maybe you're a teacher or a pastor. Get The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. It's fantastic. And Patrick Lencioni also has a couple podcasts that we talked about. You can subscribe to those. At the Table with Patrick Lencioni and The Working Genius with Patrick Lencioni. We appreciate him sharing his story and some leadership nuggets, some gold here on Sports Spectrum. We appreciate and thank you as well for tuning in. We do appreciate when you click that play button, really. You're investing your time into listening to what we're doing here at Sports Spectrum. We continue to keep Jesus in the conversation of sports. That's our goal. That's our desire. And of course, our website, sportsspectrum.com, has all of the content and resources that can help you on your journey with the Lord. You can share podcasts like this with your friends and your family. You can read our devotionals. You can check out the articles and the stories, the videos, the I Once Was testimonies of these athletes that are out there. We want to offer it to you. It's all free at sportsspectrum.com. And then please do join us next time for another conversation here on the Sports Spectrum Podcast. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and I'll see you soon.